Crumbs and Filth, the Citizen Kane of podcasting. Modern man is confronted with so many movies. Which ones are films?
And which ones are filth?
In at number 81, it's the interview of its day.
Is it?
Which one's the one with the... I always get it confused.
You're thinking of the right one. You're thinking of the one where James Franco goes to North Korea, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the interview.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Which, has anyone seen?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a yeah.
All right. So Mark says nobody's seen. I disagree, because I've seen.
No, I didn't. I wasn't saying nobody's seen. What was I saying? I was saying, no, I haven't seen it.
Okay. So Mike's seen it. There's Mike. Hi, Mike. You're the guest today. Mike Richards from Mission Log. Let's give the guest the first introduction today for Films and Filth.
Great idea.
This is a podcast. Matt's here. Sweatily doing an introduction. Mark said Luke's his name. Here. Yeah, I think everyone's name was already said anyway.
Unconfidently doing an introduction.
Very confident of you.
I'm sweaty and unconfident. I'm just... The everybody.
I just checked to make sure my heater wasn't on. Okay, it's off.
I think Kim Jong-un did not like the interview, and I think that Hitler liked this. That's my theory.
Okay.
All I've ever heard is that Hitler, he wanted to watch it alone or something, and then went into a quiet room and didn't come out.
Yeah, I think he liked it.
And then he loved
Chaplin, right?
Yeah, I think so. I hate being like, well, it's warm and fuzzy that Hitler liked this.
Anyway, it's a great dictator. Great dick, as I like to call it for short.
When I was going through my edgy teenage phase, I did used to have one of Hitler's paintings on my wall, so I could be like, you know who painted that? Hitler. Makes you think.
Was it an original?
No, it's a printed it on Google.
I mean, somebody's in that collecting Piccadilly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by the way, Luke's a millionaire. We didn't tell anybody about this podcast.
Oh, no, I'm not anymore because I blew it on Hitler painting.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. I mean, I know the value of art goes up when somebody reportedly dies. Is there a market for Hitler originals?
I'm sure, honestly.
They're probably worth a lot of money.
I mean, you could get like Nazi memorabilia and stuff. I mean, what you don't see much of is this double cross stuff from this movie.
When I was looking at all the double cross stuff, you know what it was making me think of?
What? Because it was almost
Metal
making me
Slug.
Think
of... Oh, yeah. Metal Slug.
They have like the not flag. Quite Nazi images.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, as the not quite gamer guy, even I'm making a hit there. Maybe that is what I was like trying to recall when seeing the movie.
Yeah, there's no way I didn't make you play Metal Slug at some point, Matt, if you hadn't played
I've played plenty of that on my own.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should talk a little bit about how we encountered this movie. Maybe this is the first time for everyone. I've seen it at least once, because around 2000, they put out really nice versions of, the Gold Rush, the Late Modern Times, this, Limelight, and maybe something else. Maybe Limelight was the last one, actually. But I watched it at least once. Although, you know, when I'm like, I want to see a Chaplin film, I usually go for the previous two because they're... This is an interesting one. First let's talk about where... Is this your first time?
Yes.
You know, yes. Okay, Luke. I'm going to...
This is my second time watching.
Oh, it's the second time. Okay, that's cool.
There was a Charlie Chaplin-based Pokemon. And when I did the episode about him, I watched this movie and included a bit of the speech at the end of my episode.
Okay, cool. Mike, how was this choice for you?
Enjoyed it immensely. First time, although I had seen the speech before, just in, individual clip form.
Yeah, my quick review watching it is like, most of the movie, it's, pretty well made. Of course, it's got the weird, like, bifurcated plot thing with Chaplin and his two characters. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, people came out of the theater thinking this is great because of the speech at the end, right? Otherwise, I don't know if it's quite up to where it's for me. I don't know. It didn't have the entertainment value of the last two for me personally.
just a second. I want to confirm this with Luke, that Mr. Mime turns into Mr. Rhyme, and that's Charlie Chaplin Pokemon?
Yeah, only the Galarian Mr. Mime, but yes, okay. Those are the Pokemon I'm talking about.
Wow, that was like a whole nother language. Okay.
you know what else is?
Well, I know Mr. Mime because I saw
everything that Hitler says in this movie.
Yeah, I saw Detective Pokemon, so I do know Mr. Mime at least.
So the taglines from this, the comedy Pokemon masterpiece.
Right.
Chaplin talks ... while you laugh, his greatest comedy since Shoulder Arms and the Gold Rush. He talks. The world will be laughing again. And once again, the whole world laughs.
It is interesting that this is where Chaplin talks, since his last two movies were made in the sound era. And he does sing in one of them, right? So he was really, I guess, because he was, unlike Buster Keaton, who we were talking about a few months ago, Chaplin was a good businessman. So he was still able to do this. It was his political views that got him, booted out of the country in the end.
Well, and the grooming thing, I don't know. It depends on how you view an 18-year-old, but yeah, that was definitely sort of a thing where he made himself a little vulnerable to his enemies.
That doesn't help, yes.
But I mean, he started a whole studio, even though that didn't work out as well. If you want to have your brain completely explode and melt, read a history of United Artists, because that company was basically bought, sold, traded, renamed, dissolved. Other things were named United Artists. Most recently, something that Amazon owns was named United Artists and released Creed 3 and then folded back into Amazon. So
yeah, it is kind of just a prestige thing to stick on your movie if you can afford it now, you know?
Yeah, which is, I don't know, that's like 10 layers of irony, I think.
It is basically where MGM is at this point too, I believe.
He did help basically destroy the studio system. There was a court decision. See, there's so much to read about this whole dense, like, layer cake of a topic that I skimmed a lot of it.
See, I just assumed you'd do that. That's why after watching a great dictator, I put on B-52's videos last night instead.
that's a good move. I mean, it's really interesting that in a few weeks we'll be talking about Paths of Glory, which is sort of floating around, you know, sort of tangentially related to the end of the Blacklist, and this is tangentially related to the beginning of the Blacklist, or at least, you know, Charlie Chaplin was one of the first targets of it, and he just sort of got kind of low-key deported or not allowed to come back in 52.
Right.
But that's jumping way ahead to after this movie is made. We're talking about this movie. The structure of this is really weird. I put in my notes that these guys were going to switch places at the beginning of my notes, and it happened in like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Right.
Mm.
And then there's the speech, and then he gains the power of telepathy to speak to his girlfriend telepathically.
He's a magical man.
Was she not just listening to a radio?
Oh yeah, maybe.
Well, it's the RC Clark rule, right? Technology is magic. Like, it's magic.
She was in Osterlick, right? Osterlick just got invaded, so you gotta know what's going on. Everybody's got the radio on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot radios existed. Luke, would you take this speech over the Independence Day speech?
No. This speech is like legitimately respected, so it's not as funny to bring it out in formal situations as doing the Independence Day speech.
We will not go quietly into the night.
Mm-hmm. Don't get started.
Yeah, don't test Luke. He's got the whole thing memorized.
He'll do it. This speech is a lot more inexplicable and feels tacked on, which is exactly what happened. It was tacked on by Chaplin after France was invaded. He was sort of like, oh, I need to turn this up a little bit. I don't know how I feel about that as an ending, but it's a great speech. And people probably needed to hear it, especially because it wasn't cool to hate Hitler when this was in production, which is crazy. But really, England said they would ban this film when it was finished. Hmm. And by the time it was finished, they were at war with Germany. So that's wild.
Weird, weird production history. Hey, Luke, mm-hmm. Can you tell us a quick story on this one?
Sure. In the wake of losing a world war, the country of Tomania has fallen under the double cross, and the fascist regime of Hinkle. Hinkle is keen to go to war, trying to strike deals with rich financiers and later a fellow dictator. Meanwhile, a Jewish barber, who saved a heroic commander in the war, leaves military hospital and returns to the ghetto, where he just wants a quiet life with his new lady love, Hannah. The regime won't allow the Jews a quiet life, and as he's forced to flee on the eve of war, the barber inadvertently swaps places with Hinkle and finds himself giving a speech to the world, denouncing hate and dictators, promoting love and freedom.
All right, there we go. How deep is everyone's chaplain? Of course, you see shorts on in the background. I think the shorts, I have the memory of the Electric Company sketches. Mark, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm pretty casual chaplain enjoyer. I've spent more time with Marx Brothers and maybe even Three Stooges.
Yeah, I've seen like his movies, but I haven't seen a lot of the shorts. Like I said, I think I'm actually conflating it with the lady who did it in the late 70s in the Electric Company. But I guess
I've seen a bit of his silent stuff. I guess I'm more of a Keaton fan. But like I don't have deep Chaplin knowledge to the point that I was really surprised to learn that this was his first talking role.
Yeah, 14 years after the first talkie. He waited a long time for this.
But I saw a comment on, I watched this film on archive.org, and one of the top comments was like, "Oh, I heard that Chaplin talked in a film, and this must be it." And I was like, that can't be correct. He must have talked in others before this. But no.
He sang.
Yeah.
There were some scenes. That's thing, City Lights in Modern Times, they do have soundtracks, like a very curated soundtracks of sound effects and music. It's just nobody talks.
Well, it was interesting to me. There were a couple of scenes, like the scene where he's like cutting Hannah's hair. She's doing all the talking and he's doing none of it. And then there are a lot of scenes where he's Hinkle and he's doing all the talking and nobody else is talking. So it is like a rhythmically unusual film. I don't want to say it wasn't like an off-putting thing, but it was noticeably, the rhythm was weird to me.
Mike, what's your general Chaplin temperature?
I have an appreciative temperature. Warm is how I would describe it. Just somewhat inexperienced. I've seen Chaplin films over the course of my life. I probably couldn't speak intelligently about any of them. Just kind of watching old movies when they were on, mostly the silent ones. And I think I'm right there with Mark and being more of a Marx Brothers and Stooges, if we're lumping those in together with Chaplin. I always thought of him more as an expert in physical comedy and physical acting. And as a silent, movie, icon, I think that would go hand in hand. So I was surprised when I first found out about this film, which was probably sometime in the last 10 years or so, when all the dictator talk and, neo-fascism stuff started to come back into vogue. So, just voice and cadence and stuff I found to be very interesting. And I don't think I've had an opportunity to chat about the mid-Atlantic accent with somebody that came from the other side of the Atlantic like I have to tonight. Is that so? I guess the idea is that would be passable as either an American or as a UK or British accent. I found it
idea,
to be,
but it doesn't sound like anyone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, to me, it sounded perfectly, congruent with something that you might hear in New England or, among, the affluent or the rich, stereotypical folks from movies of that days.
Like movie voice to me.
Certainly wasn't one of those guys whose career, tumbled because of the talkies. I mean, he'd start on vaudeville anyway. He was, Keaton, both of them were actually quite good at verbal comedy. They just, grew up in the silent era. So
I don't think I'd ever seen him talk in a film before. And I was like, his voice is really beautiful. I don't know else to say it. He's a great talker. I mean, not just the speech at the end, but overall, it was like really fun to hear him. Well, it was fun to hear him use English and fake German. But
the fake German reminded me of like, that's the same shtick the Minions are doing to this day.
Wait, that wasn't real German? I'm just kidding.
But yeah, that stuff was really funny.
The translation of it was great too.
I think maybe the block I've always had like with this particular movie is I'm thinking of so many other movies while watching it. Like I made Mark and Luke watch Duck Soup a few years ago, and I sent Mike a clip of at least a tune of that. Maybe I'll even put that as a bonus with this because it kind of makes sense.
And Matt, after we chatted, I had seen that before, and I think I can blame the hosts of Mission Log for being responsible for that. I think there was an episode where Ken brought it up, or maybe Ken and John. So I made a point to watch it a few years ago. So I had seen that before and watched a little bit more about it today. But yes, I can see why you connected those dots.
And talking to Three Stooges, Mo Howard also plays a Hitler in You Nazi. It's like a mix of Nazi and nasty.
Yeah. Nasty.
Nazi spy. And Chaplin's is more thought out and more like controlled. I like Mo's better because it's just unhinged insanity.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, if there's any glaring flaw in this film, it's just that I wanted to see Charlie Chaplin do Hitler the entire time. And because I laughed, but I was like, I know inside my brain that the film cannot be that. Like that would not work.
Well, yeah, that's why the Three Stooges one is, 15 minutes long, right? So you could have Mo do that the entire time. And then there's films made later. It also made me think of the barber character made me think a lot about Peter Sellers and Being There, just kind of like this weird, like cipher drifty guy. Of course, he does get a little more personality as the movie goes on, whereas the whole point is Peter Sellers' character, Chauncey Gardner, never does.
You know who he reminded me of?
Who's that?
Rowdy Roddy Piper in They Live.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Like, never given a name, just shows up.
I mean, we do get his history because we get the war scene at the beginning, but and then of course there's only like two scenes in the concentration camp. One looked, I guess we didn't know they were having like the Holocaust, but we certainly knew about the concentration camps in 1940.
Chaplin said if he knew about what the Holocaust was like, then he would not have made this.
So then I'm thinking of Life is Beautiful, Oscar-winning Life is Beautiful, and then thinking, gee, this film is aged a lot better than Life is Beautiful somehow.
I haven't seen Zone of Interest yet, but I am interested in seeing it.
So the concentration camp scene, I thought, well, that doesn't look so bad. I mean, their depiction of it.
Yeah.
And that was the first thing I thought of is like, did they have any idea what was going on in these things? No. Chaplin even said that. The film that made me think of, though, was Things to Come. And I know there's not a lot in common with it. It just sort of made me think of that, kind of extrapolating out. Okay, starting with World War One, we know there's another one coming. How long is this next one going to last? Turns out that one lasted pretty near forever. But there was also pretty, an aviator at the heart of that film as well. Like there was Schultz in this movie. So that's probably the extent of the similarities, but it did cross my mind.
Well, it's really weird brilliant how this was so ahead of the curve that it's basically, this movie is being made when World War II is basically picking up.
I didn't make the Things to Come connection because this movie got it so correct, it didn't occur to me it was speculative.
Yeah. And the only thing gets wrong is that I guess Hitler and Mussolini didn't really turn on each other all that much, even though that's definitely something that probably would have happened if they'd done well enough.
I think Mussolini, Mussolini wasn't successful enough to mess with anyone.
Mm-hmm. That is an entirely reasonable prediction to make, though. Part of the origin of this movie apparently was Chaplin seeing Triumph of the Will with, there was a French director with him, and the French director was really, I didn't take his name down, unfortunately. He was really upset and worried about what that meant, and Chaplin laughed through the entire thing. He decided that was part of what made him decide to make Great Dictator. And also, apparently Nazis put out some kind of pamphlet calling him like a Jewish clown or something like that. Chaplin was not Jewish.
I spent 10 minutes researching that last night, actually.
Yeah.
Which he said, But he had a really good quote about that, which I think I wrote down. I do. When asked if he was Jewish, Chaplin responded, "I do not have that honor."
Oh, that's a good quote.
That's a good quote.
And right above that was just knowing that Chaplin. I mean, obviously they got old school, you know, toxic makeup on his face. So I was like, well, Chaplin aged pretty well at this point. He's what, 51 in this movie?
Yes.
And I'm used to watching Twilight Zone episodes where they're 35 years old and they look 70, you know?
I think Chaplin was just an incredibly attractive person. That's why he's a movie star. I mean, look at Paulette Goddard, who is his wife in real life at the time they made this, even though the marriage fell apart pretty soon. She's incredibly hot. They're both just like insanely gorgeous people.
Well, I mean, did she start growing a beard after he shaved her? Because they say that happens, and maybe that's why they split up.
Apparently, he wanted her to clean the entire set to as sort of a payback for getting her this role, and she refused. And
clean the set? Like,
oh, I thought you were going to say he wanted her to clean the set as like a sort of a kink thing.
No, I don't think. I think this was a pretty dysfunctional marriage at this point, and
like he was a little bit of a freak, you know.
Yeah, well, apparently he was, according to legend, he was trying to save the marriage, but it just wasn't working out. And then
I jokingly wrote, "Was Chaplin one of Hollywood's greatest stickmen?" Which was a nickname applied to Burgess Meredith for sleeping all across Hollywood. And then I looked deeper, and it turned out that Goddard's next husband was Burgess Meredith.
You put that in the Eskimo Brother database, the EBDB.
Wow.
So
he just shows up on set, and he's like, "You're a bum, Chaplin." Bum. That's like way out of timeline.
also, that's the best nickname ever.
Yeah.
I did. I've never heard that. Close-up shots on Chaplin's face. And I was like, oh, it really makes sense they got Downey Jr. to play in.
Yes, I had that thought several times. They do actually
look a lot alike.
It is funny now Downey Jr.'s older. Like, well, he could do it again if he wanted to. And he should film new scenes as Chaplin, edit them with the old movie, you know, and have a like biopic that actually has proper aging for once outside, you know. What the Up series? I guess that has it in Boyhood.
Well, I didn't see Chaplin, but it's really funny that that was, I think, considered one of his first like serious films. I mean, Downey Jr. And then he just won an Oscar for being like on the other side, like being a blacklist prosecution guy.
Yep.
I guess that's what those are the two roles.
I guess that's what actors have to do. They have to take on different roles sometimes.
You either get blacklisted or you live long enough to be a blacklister.
Right.
So I finally watched Oppenheimer, by the way, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we were correct. Godzilla should have won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer should have won Best Effects.
Well, it was pretty watchable for a 3.5 hour movie.
It was watchable, but...
Yeah.
Well, basically, there was a two-hour great film about the Manhattan Project.
Yeah.
With an unnecessary half an hour either side to make it Oppenheimer.
Yeah, it was... Right. A lot of the stuff at the end felt tacked on just specifically to make him like a persecuted guy.
Well, I've read since it's because it's adapted from a book.
Ah.
And it sounds like Nolan included every single page of that book.
I read the first 50 pages, and that's about accurate. And to the point where I was like, well, I just watched a movie. I guess I don't really need to read this book right now. I could wait a little while.
So. Yeah, I'm not dying to see Oppenheimer again, like on any level. If somebody said, hey, come over to my house and watch Godzilla Minus One right now, even though I've seen it twice, I'd be like, yeah, sure.
I would hang up this cool right now to watch Godzilla Minus One.
I was looking forward to the Godzilla Minus One Minus Color release, but it was only very limited release in the States. I don't know if that was shown over where you guys are.
I missed it because I've been broke, and the easiest way to save money is just wait to see things at home all the time.
Yeah,
but I do want to see Godzilla plus Kong. Wait, X-Kong?
X-Kong. Everything's an X now.
Godzilla multiplied by Kong. Yes, I want to
see that. Yeah, because it's a team-up. That's the symbol that you use that the kids are using for team-up these days.
Godzilla cross Kong, if it was in Japan. That's, you know, Street Fighter cross Tekken. Anyway, now we're getting way into the weeds.
Okay, I will turn every podcast we do into a Godzilla podcast. You can't stop me.
Yeah, who would win, Godzilla or the entire army of Tomania?
Godzilla or Oppenheimer?
Godzilla or the both of these armies in this film?
Or the Godzilla. Or Hinkle? But yeah. Godzilla versus Hinkle? They have that. Was it? Oh no, I'm thinking of Godzilla versus Bambi. But you could do that with a Hitler too, and it would be
sure. Funny. Just put Hitler in there instead of Bambi, and he just steps on. That'd be great.
Yes,
I'd watch it.
I've often said Hitler and Bambi are pretty much the same.
I mean, yeah, they were damaged.
What do you think of maybe what's your favorite comedy bit in this? I guess him bouncing a globe around for only 30 seconds is the most famous bit. I thought that was going to go on for like 14 minutes or something for some reason.
That bit was amusing, like conceptually, but I wasn't necessarily belly laughing at it.
No, I'm just saying that's the kind of the signifier for this film. If you're watching a Hollywood retrospective, that's the clip they'll show.
Yeah.
Was it only, how long did you say that clip was?
It wasn't that long. He only bounced the ball around for like 30 seconds.
It felt like a while.
It sure did. Yeah.
I put in my notes that scene looked better than any CGI I've ever seen. It's just this is a great case for just letting somebody just do something neat.
Maybe it's because you guys just watched and you're like, why is this still going on? Whereas I watched it last time and had imprinted in my head, he bounces the ball around for 14 minutes. So then when it wasn't that long, it felt short.
Because I'm more on the 14 minute part page right now.
Okay. Okay.
I got to watch it again.
I think that's how I got there, actually.
I mean, the thing about it is that I tried to take notes, and it's so hard to take notes about a comedy film because I just find myself just saying all the writing down all the jokes, so I have
to. It's also hard to take notes from a visual comedy movie because you don't take your eyes off it.
Yeah, that too.
Actually, in terms of comedy, I think the funniest stuff was the World War One stuff at the start.
Yeah, that was great.
He was just doing pure Chaplin, but the upside down plane, that was great.
I like the plane. I like the spinning bomb when he went to let's the bomb didn't go off. Let's go investigate. No. First of all, no.
You go straight from that into the first Hinkle speech, which was also brilliant.
I just found something funny. The redirect on Wikipedia from Adenoid Hinkle is to Adolf Hitler.
Ah, nice. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's the same guy.
Oh my God. I forgot about the two character thing. So for 5 minutes, I was like, oh, the nice army guy turned out to be a monster. Just for like three minutes.
I feel like that this movie easily could have worked with that.
Isn't like that kind of like Hitler's rise? You're just like an army schlub that turned into Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
If this was made years after World War II was over, then yeah, the barber stuff wouldn't be in there. That's like the barber stuff is social commentary that people needed to hear in 1940. Luke, is English mustard really that hot?
It's kind of hot.
Okay.
It's not like wasabi or anything.
Okay, yeah, I always think of hot mustard as like specifically called hot mustard. I'd never heard it called English mustard. That might be a different thing.
Well, Mark, if you do make that trip to Orlando, you can go to the Hot Dog Hall of Fame where you can sample 10 different kinds of mustard at their mustard station.
Sure.
I'd imagine it's hotter than you would like on your strawberries.
Yeah. Even though, I don't know. I'd try a little bit.
You would try a little bit of mustard on a strawberry?
If it was hot, yeah. Why not? That sounds weird. Sounds umami.
That was classy mustard packaging. I did like
that. Sorry, just then, as I was looking for a funny section, I was sort of scrubbing through the film on my phone. And it goes from, like, there's the comedy war part, there's the big comedy speech, then there's the sort of bonking on the head, escaping the stormtroopers. Then he's getting lynched.
Yeah.
The tonal shifts in this film are kind of wild, but I think it works because it is sort of showing the ridiculousness of fascists while at the same time they are still doing pretty heinous stuff.
It's kind of a great idea to load so much of the fascist wacky jokes at the end instead of, you feel like that this would be, compare this to Inglourious Basterds, which the four of us talked about, where it's definitely a rhythm of You don't spend too long with any specific characters, including the titular Inglourious Bastards. For this, you spend like a lot of time with the barber, and then you spend a lot of time with Hinkle and Italian fake Mussolini. I didn't
fake Mussolini got a supporting actor nom for this movie, by the way.
That's right. Chaplin didn't win anything, and he was kind of hurt.
Did he win anything for his last two movies? That's the ones he should have won for. Okay. But yeah, I was like noting, hey, I actually kind of like Jack Oakey. Okay.
Right, right.
Playing Macaroni. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the
Benzini Napoloni.
So good.
Okay, and then there's the Pfizer garbage. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
You know, having garbage. The comedy stuff, his Hinkle's inventor had a couple of moments. The parachute, the bulletproof clothing.
My favorite very quick gags is like, I'm gonna now put a token of my appreciation on him, and I knew it was gonna pan over and he was gonna be covered in medals. And he's like trying to find space to fit this last one on.
Oh yeah, then he pulls all of them off while
he gives him a literal dressing down.
That was really good. That was really good.
Literal.
That might be my favorite. I put down where at one point he shows up and just says, "We've just discovered the most delightful poison gas. It will kill everyone."
And the physical comedy of Charlie Chaplin as the barber spitting out the four or five coins, I thought was funny.
Was great too.
That coin section was great because it in the middle of a scene that was actually quite dramatic, that gag came very naturally. Where they're all like trying to hide the fact that they've got the coin in their pudding. That was done really well.
Yeah, I guess it's just the tonal shift. You start talking about the bits, right? The bits are all good, but yeah, I guess maybe because there's so much dramatic weight between the bits, and then we have the two characters. It's just off balance.
Worked especially well because the bit came so naturally from the dramatic moment.
Yeah, because sometimes, like, am I supposed to be laughing now?
There was one or two moments where something like very serious was happening, and then he does like a silly pratfall or something, and I'm like, okay,
it's a comedy. Other people on screen, Maurice Moscovich had some screen presence and died the same year. That was the old guy. So if he looked like he was on Death's Door to you, he was.
He didn't look that old.
He didn't look that old. I was kind of surprised to see that he kicked off in 1940.
Who had Magneto vibes?
Yes. I later wrote down, I guess I like him because I like McClellan.
So it's funny. I thought that same exact thing. And there was even a... like a Jason Alexander-esque guy talking to him at one point. I'm like, if we remake this today, I've got cast members in mind.
Although it's a pretty unremakeable movie. It is fascinating that this movie can only be made at this one moment in time like this, you know?
I mean, they probably could have made it within a couple of decades after this, but, you know...
we've had
Hitler.
You know?
We've had Hitler comedies, right? I mean, since then, am I crazy?
No, I'm not saying
the producers. I would say,
yeah. I'm not saying it could only be made this time because it would be offensive at a different time. I'm just saying this exact mixture of tones is only popular possible at this moment in time.
I mean, the obvious successor to me is just from about 10 years ago. There was a horror film that was like three or four different shorts within it, but the standout was called The Diary of Anne Frankenstein, and it was basically that Anne Frank's family was descended from Frankenstein, and then Hitler busts into their hiding place and shoots all of them and then makes a Frankenstein, and everyone is speaking real German except the guy who plays Hitler, who is like a very tall, he's like 6'7" or something, and he's just screaming ridiculous things. And I'd highly recommend finding that on YouTube because it's really funny. But
I still haven't gotten around to watching Jojo Rabbit. Does that fit the right space?
No, it's much better than it's much funnier than that.
Mark, would that be a 2011 film called Chillerama?
Yes. Yes, Hitler is God, who's Hitler played by? I feel like Damn it.
Joel David Moore.
Right, Joel David Moore. I know I've seen him in something before, but it was just sort of a thing where, one of the Jasons plays Frankenstein, but he's like the Jewish Frankenstein, of course. Anyway,
Frankenstein.
Yes, Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, how did we all think of Hinkle was trying to get his funding from Epstein?
Oh yes, I have several.
I think everybody noticed that.
That has aged insanely.
Yeah, well, it works so much better now, doesn't it?
I'm just glad. I was wondering if there was not, if maybe you didn't have to visit Epstein Island to get to get his funding.
He's on the list for sure.
Ever came to that?
He's on the list. He's on the flight logs multiple times. But yeah, that's why I'm like, wow, that's a case where this is actually aged better because it actually makes it funnier.
Yeah, he used evil Thule magic to live for another 100 years or 80 years. I mean, wasn't that what he was sort of trying to do on the island, was like live forever? Wasn't that part of Epstein's entire thing? Like his plan?
There's 87 theories and all of them are wrong, most likely.
Okay. I didn't look too far into it because it's horrible and I don't want to think about it.
But yeah, I've heard there's like weird Egyptian architecture around on.
Yeah. I saw a picture of it, and it's a place where I would immediately want to leave if I was there.
Honestly, if I had my own island, I might build weird Egyptian stuff, maybe for a different purpose, but yeah.
I mean, I would go mid-century, like space station vibes.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it would be my number one, but I could understand, like, without horrible things coming into play, how you might make your island a weird Egyptian place if you felt like it.
Yeah, okay, that is not an immediate indicator of guilt, having like,
so
an
Egyptian. Mark, are you saying you haven't downloaded Epstein on Steam?
I have not. No.
I mean, don't.
Okay. I did. I downloaded.
It's just a crap asset flip island survival game, but also with a bunch of inappropriate Epstein humor.
I downloaded Sex with Stalin. It was not very fun, but it was, I don't know, it wasn't very fun.
Me and Mercy still regularly quote the meme we saw, but it was a picture of Stalin when he was young and obviously pretty hot. Mm-hmm. And the top comment underneath was, "Gulag, gulag, gulag is just the sound of that cock hitting the back of my throat."
Yeah, that's kind of funnier than anything I found in Sex with Stalin. But, you know, visual novels, gotta love them.
Mm-hmm. Any other things you guys got? Like, I'm just kind of scrolling around my notes and seeing if there's anything that I wrote that actually makes sense that's worth saying. I don't know if I trust this barber after 20 years in a sanitarium with a straight razor on my face, but whatever.
This film
I'm
was
always
banned.
Amazed when I see in old films that people used to let the barber shave them like that.
I've been straight razor shaven at a barber.
Mm.
Actually, no, the one I do it now, they do it around like the back of your ears and get rid of that part. But yeah, they straight razor it.
I mean, I just shave my entire head with a Gillette in the shower. So
right. I use a safety razor, which is sort of like one step away from a straight razor. But I also have cut myself a lot. And sometimes I'll just leave the house, and then 2 hours later I look at myself in the car mirror and there's just like scabs. I'm like, damn it.
I just buy the novelty razors. I showed you guys my JoJo razor, which is the next one after my Kometsu razors are finally finished.
I have Evangelion razors. But I did buy the cheap, like, supermarket owned brand ones once. And the blood was just pouring down my head and I looked like Kratos.
This film was banned in Spain until 1975, which was not as long as Paths of Glory was banned.
They had banned for this movie.
Span.
Oh, you think this movie is your ally?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't see, this is one where, like, sometimes you watch a movie and I'm like, okay, even Paths of Glory, like, I see why it was banned in France, right? For a while. Shouldn't have been, but I see. This one, I'm like, I don't get it.
I can see why it would be banned in Germany, but that's about it.
Yeah, I could see that. in
Italy. The speech, dude, the speech at the end is like, I think a dictator sees that, even though it feels innocuous by today's standards. I think that any dictator would just see that and be like, nah, I'm just gonna be on the safe side and say no to this.
But even not a dictator, like, just the military industrial complex, I don't think was a fan of that. Yeah. It was very communist adjacent for people of that time.
Mm-hmm. I was about to be like, oh, I'll just read the speech on air. And then I looked at it. I was like, oh, no, I'm not. It's the first quote on IMDb's Great Dictator page, if anybody wants to refresh themselves.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Yeah.
It is good. That's why I was like, maybe I'll read some. And I was like, whoa, it was longer than I remember.
Was that your reason for saying no, Matt, because it's too long?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's like the full last 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could visually show you, maybe if you can see that screen, which you can't.
No, you're just holding up a bright white light.
Yeah, I realize that on my screen. But yeah, just trust me.
Podcasting. Yeah, this was one of the... Reading up on trivia before I finished watching the film, I knew that's how the film ended and was dreading it, but it did work pretty well because it was just that good of a speech. I feel like most comedians deep down want to do something really meaningful, and it's hard. It's sort of like, it's hard. Comedy is hard. Being a comedian and then sort of translating that to drama is also hard. Especially if you are way in front like that.
We've seen Jim Carrey make attempts. We saw Robin Williams make attempts. Name somebody who's a prolific, cinematic comedian, and I think at some point they take a stab at, a more dramatic role.
Sometimes, and a lot of them don't. I don't know. I think like Adam Sandler just done a fantastic job at that. Maybe a better job at that than in comedy, which is funny.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he's even trying to make comedy sometimes. I think he's just like, hey, everybody good. No,
it's just
Hawaii
some sort
vacation.
Of tax break with him and his friends, right?
Yeah, which I can't hate on at all. That's great.
Oh, I got the utmost respect for that racket.
See, on the speech, though, get back to that. I feel like that's one of the biggest character breaks in film history. Like, I just assume that is Chaplin talking to me now, not this barber. Although he does say that Hannah stuff at the... Hannah, excuse me. I got to say it not like my daughter's name. Hannah.
Hannah.
Sorry, I got myself distracted by that. Anyway, he does that at the end. That's obviously the Jewish barber. But the rest of the time, I'm like, okay, Chaplin is just talking to me now.
Well, maybe he was sort of talking to his wife, like, please don't divorce me.
Mm. please clean the studio.
Well, I want to go into more detail that I didn't take down, which is that... Okay, they were living in Switzerland and had no contact and spotted each other at a cafe and had lunch together. It was their last meeting. Oh, well, that was the 60s. Anyway, that's the details.
That's like the ending of The Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
I think it's a Paul Simon song.
Four of you have agreed to meet at a cafe. I can't do it.
No, Luke's sleep. Much better at it.
Yeah, it's all
right. See, I'm not even going to try mine because I know it's not as good already. Yeah.
Well, Henry Kissinger was alive at this point, and he probably talked like that.
Like Bane?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
well, he had to wear the mask, I guess.
maybe he did. I'm sure he wore a mask in some of his, like, sex crimes.
Hmm.
I'll just go ahead and, whatever, allegedly.
Did you listen to the game show, Mark, where everyone just resorted to accusing random gaming executives of being nonces?
Yeah, that was great. Was that the one where it was like, wait, was that the recent one where you're like, why should these people be punched?
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Everyone gave up on giving me real facts and just like, yeah, he's probably a nonce.
Yeah, that's right. I was kind of disappointed that nobody suggested punching Randy Pitchford because he was a magician.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry, I'm getting that glazed over look, aren't I?
So this one is one of those films where it's like, there's absolutely no mystery to me why this is on the good list.
Yep.
Because the only people who will have watched it are the sort of people who would give it a 10-star review.
I got 3 1-stars here.
Oh, I'm sure they're out there. Yeah. But like a lot of the films on our good list are there because they don't really bother anyone. Like, yeah, as we always bring up, that's why Shawshank is our number one. Whereas this film is in the school of like, no, yeah, this like the people who go out of their way to watch a film like this probably consider it a masterpiece.
I think it's got a lot to offer. It's kind of like a shotgun in that it offers it kind of all over the place, but the comedy is kind of unimpeachable, and I don't find any of the stuff that's not comedy objectionable, even though, I don't know, maybe if I was a fascist, I would be bothered by this. I'm not even sure. I feel like a lot of modern fascists would probably tell themselves, he's not talking about me.
Yeah.
Chaplin would hate Antifa.
I guess with our...
Antifa are the real fascists.
Yeah, exactly.
With our films or filth edict, I'm kind of going to allude to what you said. Like, to me, yeah, of course it's film, but it's like little canisters of film scattered around the room, and you have to like gather them and put them together.
I mean, I'd rather rewatch Duck Soup, but
oh yeah,
still very. that's the thing. Duck Soup sort of is the let's just follow the dictators the whole time and do wacky evil stuff. That's like chaotic evil. And this is somewhat some lawful evil and then some like chaotic good, I guess.
I guess that's where the flaw of this one, not flaw, but just it directly bats up toe to toe with Duck Soup and doesn't, you know, it loses for me.
Yeah.
But
I think most, well, unless you are really tickled by the Hitler impression just that
I
much.
I think I did enjoy this more than Duck Soup.
Okay.
Maybe my tastes have just changed. It's been a few years, but I remember feeling like I was sitting through Duck Soup in a way that I didn't feel with this, where I was like, I was watching this and enjoying it start to finish.
Interesting. Well,
I guess that's just where you're a Marx Brothers obsessor or not. Cause it's not uncommon for me to put one on YouTube on my iPad next to my bed when I'm going to sleep, you know, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So
that's just it is that, you know, like I was saying, Duck Soup is chaotic evil. I don't think Luke is very chaotic evil. I think he's like lawful good or lawful neutral, depending on what day it is.
I see myself as pretty chaotic.
Mm.
Well, you have your chaos. I just that shirt.
I
sucks.
Choose chaos.
That shirt sucks. Chaotica. Because I could say I'm chaotic. I could say I'm chaotic evil or chaotic neutral, but then
I like to think of myself as chaotic good.
I'm very orderly sometimes and very anal. So then. I don't know.
I can never remember the different divisions long enough to choose one.
There you go. Chaotic.
Confused.
Chaotic anarchist. Confused. Chaotic entropist.
It's exactly like the Myers-Briggs test. It's just as much bullshit as that. The alignment chart. But yeah, but I understand. I can definitely see how someone would like this more than Duck Soup. It's just it's sort of a different vibe and a different thing. And it's meticulously crafted, this film.
But also, I think Chaplin's brand of physical comedy is ageless in a way that actual spoken comedy can age a lot more.
Makes sense.
Like, there's not actually that many quote-unquote jokes in this. The joke is just that he's doing a silly German voice or a bunch of physical comedy. Whereas the Marx Brothers stuff has a lot more like jokes and quips, which maybe, you know, your mileage can vary a lot more on those.
Yeah, there are references in there that date, but one for me, the Marx Brothers kind of their thing is, wow, it's like almost 100 years later now. And like, it still sticks for, I guess, Mark and myself, but maybe not for everybody.
I don't think anybody, you're not going to find anything from 100 years prior that everyone can agree on, period. So it's like somebody might be listening to this and they're like, I tried watching both of these movies. I can't stand them. And I'm sure that's very...
they don't have no color in them.
I wouldn't judge that person either, really.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I've met
if you spoke to me 10, 15 years ago, I don't think I'd have sat through either of those films.
Yeah, I mean, I used to work with this guy who was from Indonesia, and he was just like, I like long movies. I don't like movies that are less than 3 hours long. He was like, I like Transformers. I like Avatar. I don't like movies less than 3 hours. So it's like,
that's to get his money's worth. You got to respect that.
A lot of the international market. That's why the Indian movies are very long and things like that. It's, you know, indie movies are long because people want to go to the movie theater and spend a decent amount of time at the movie theater. That's a cultural thing that we don't really understand here. I mean,
I'm so excited now when a film is 90 minutes.
Me too.
Yeah. An hour and 40, I think, is the sweet spot.
I mean, do you guys feel like this, The Great Dictator at 2 hours, could have been a little shorter?
Oh, I don't necessarily, I wouldn't know what to cut because I think it was all gold. But yeah, it could have been shorter.
There was a little pacing. I liked the scenes, you know, like Matt said, you know, the kind of individual cans of film you had to gather to watch this film. I think I liked them all. I mean, I was surprised a movie from 1940 wasn't 2 hours and 6 minutes long myself. I mean, I'm not the cinephile that a lot of other people are, but that struck me as being long. I mean, when I grew up watching black and white old movies on TV, they usually crammed them into a 90-minute time slot. Mm. Now, I don't know what kind of hack job they had to do that, but they did it. So I was surprised to see that on this one. But I do think that, you know, at the time, even now in different places, I mean, there's a large percentage of the world that has democratically elected authoritarian leaders, you know, over the last 10 or 15 years, which is surprising, you know, and surprising how it starts and then surprising how it ends, I think, to a lot of people. And I mean, this movie, it did shed a light on that, you know, at a time where I think a lot of people were shying away from the reality of the situation.
Well, yeah. Studying history and living through history are two different things. And living through it, I guess, usually teaches a stronger lesson. And then you start screaming about the dumb kids out there, right?
It does and it doesn't. You know, the whole thing, history is written by the victors. They can't write it till they won, right? I mean,
right.
Think about how clueless a lot of people are right now at what we're going through. Not to target anyone specifically, but you know, I was handed one of those things. You know, when sometimes Facebook has one of those dumb generic posts where someone asks a question at a radio station and everyone answers it, and it said, "What comedian do you just not find funny?" And someone I knew commented on it. So it showed me that. So I sort of scrolled through and I saw a lot of people say Kathy Griffin. And a lot of people just straight up shared the photo of Kathy Griffin holding the fake Trump head up. So it's like basically a group of people that are very shrill and loud about cancel culture being like, how dare this woman hold this effigy up of this, you know, guy who literally encouraged people to storm the Capitol of the United States.
Yeah, the only people who actually engage in cancel culture are the same people who complain about cancel culture.
Yes, and that's starting to become more and more obvious to a lot of people, but not everyone. And a lot of people who are participating in that kind of discourse are just totally oblivious to just everything. I mean, if you complain about cancel culture and then cancel people, then you don't know what you're... Chances are you don't know what you're doing.
The amount of... What's the word? Like... The amount of dissonance people have room for in their heads always surprises me.
Confirmation bias?
No. Like, people can genuinely believe two completely contradictory things and not notice so easily.
Yeah. I think dissonance sounds about right. I do know. Yeah, there is a term for that, though, isn't there? Just to go back to Mike's link thing, that sounds bad. I just picked up this Gary Cooper films, you know, 30s leading man, and none of them break 2 hours. One of them goes an hour 54. Bo Guest is an hour 54. So, yeah, I was just curious because these were like in the 30s, these were like the high prestige films, right? He's your DiCaprio at the time or whatever. So,
I mean, I was going to bring up that Metropolis was originally 2.5 hours, and I think Birth of a Nation was 3 hours or something. Ooh, I've never watched.
In America, Metropolis was cut to 90, like from the get-go.
So
Americans,
I feel like there's a lesson there. Americans can only deal with 2 hours, but the 2 hour movies have to be about Germany.
It took 80 years. It took 80 years to make Metropolis 3 hours.
Did we ever get a running time on A Nation's Pride from Inglourious Bastards? Did we find that out?
Well, if you want to judge that by the film that's on IMDb that was made at the time, I think 17 minutes.
Okay. Good to know.
Birth of a Nation is 3 hours and 15 minutes. And is it?
How about Intolerance? How about Intolerance, his follow-up film?
Intolerance.
It has an intolerable length.
It sounds intolerable. Thank you. Yes.
That's where they built the giant Babylon sets that may or may not still be in LA. They were there for many years as a tourist attraction. I mean, I've never been to LA, so I don't know. But
Matt, you watched Mank. Doesn't Mank go into a lot of the Chaplin stuff that happened after the downfall or the fallout from this film?
I think I told you I started Mank.
Oh, my bad.
Well, and then My Shame is the only film I've ever seen about the life of Charlie Chaplin is Shanghai Nights.
Intolerance is 2 hours and 43 minutes, and
it's not quite as long as I thought. Okay.
Oh, it's a 7.7. People like it, kinda.
Yeah, that's when Griffin was like, "Wow, even in the teens, I look like a horrible racist. I better do something completely different."
Wow. Good for him.
Like, crap! I jump started the KKK. I better make something to try and make up for that.
Wonder what he's doing now.
Spinning in his grave? I don't know.
Burning in hell.
Like I said, there's only 3 1-stars here, so I guess I'll just read them all. Terrible. None of them are that great. Barrel through. Terrible. That the film is well-meaning does not make it any good. It's simply dreadful. Chaplin is awful as Hitler.
Really?
They were looking for a, accurate portrayal, not... Not this comedy nonsense.
Yeah, it's not a downfall performance, that's for sure. 6 out of 34 found that helpful.
Let's bring back the downfall meme, but let's put subtitles on Charlie Chaplin's reds.
Yeah, sure. Just insupportable. And then parenthesis, lowercase, dad. I don't know what that means. Okay. Sure, the project is honorable and courageous to kick dictators and alert about the oppressed, but a movie is not a political work, but an artistic one. Honestly, I tried to watch it, but after 20 minutes of unfunny jokes, heavy pantomimes, and silly grimaces, I had enough. The production looks cheap, or the sets are really badly built. The scenes are tedious, endless, so that's not really my kind of fun. And it really discourages me of watching any Charlot film after that. For the same subject, prefer the comic Mouse. Well, you should read Mouse. Okay, I'll give that out. 12 out of 64 found that helpful. I like Charlot written in there.
Charlot.
I think they meant Charlie and it came out. Or Chaplin. or maybe they started writing Charlie and finished writing Chaplin.
He's credited in this as Charles Chaplin.
Yes.
Was he always Charles Chaplin, or is that because this is a serious film?
I am not. He's credited...
The poster has him as Charlie. I mean, the one sheet.
Poster. Okay, I've got the answer here. It's after Modern Times, he transitioned to Charles.
Okay.
After Modern Times in 1936. So,
but not necessarily on the posters, because your marketing, you still want to put it out there. Charlie Chaplin, right?
I'm going to say probably Charlie Chaplin Carnival. He was credited as Charlie Chaplin. Oh, I see the poster for Great Dictator still says Charlie Chaplin. I don't know how these things work.
One more 1-star, so let's read them all.
Monsieur Vidu. Monsieur Vidu. He was Charles Chaplin on the poster, and that was something along the lines of he bought something from Orson Welles about a French murderer and made a comedy out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of the least Chaplin-y of the Chaplin films, I think. And then Limelight after that, which has it has Keaton in it, but it's kind of like you don't get him on screen as much as one would hope for. Like together.
I kind of want to see this. A suave but cynical man supports his family by marrying and murdering rich women for their money, but the job has some occupational hazards. That sounds fun.
I watched it once. I remember it being a way to spend 90 minutes or so.
All right.
Not a terrible one, but it didn't blow me away.
The poster says Chaplin changes. Can you?
Ooh.
He changes into a murderer. Is that what happens? I think that was in the middle of him having a really bad PR time, actually.
The last 1-star here is Downer. It is supposed to be such a great movie, but I didn't like it. There is no humor that appeals. It is all too weak. The only good thing about it was the speech the Jewish barber made in the end. 6L45 found that helpful. Mm. But I contend that was not the Jewish barber making the speech.
That was
personal stuff on there.
because that was Charlie Chaplin making the speech.
I'm going to be that. Chaplin. That was straight up Chaplin talking directly to the camera. That's for me what makes it. That conceit is what makes me accepted on the list of good movies. I guess
it wouldn't make any sense for the Jewish barber to have written all that that speech inside of his head while he was being ferried around in a limo.
Especially with the confession that I've never done public speaking in my life. I can't. Like, if there was any, like, even if you didn't intentionally include that scene and just let us wonder if maybe this barber was a master orator, then it wouldn't be so incongruent with what he just said 30 seconds before that. Then again, I still think great speech. I'm giving it a pass.
I mean, you can look at it as a superhero movie. He found it. He just found that speech somewhere, you know, inside of his, maybe he found a radioactive rock. Like
everyone's got one great speech in him.
Like, so it's orphan, wanderer, warrior, orator. Got it. It's good.
Hey, we'll Luke, I guess this is more a question for you, because sometimes we've hit stuff and I say they're pushing the button too hard, and you say, but they need to push the button that hard. For me, yeah. This is a case of pushing the button as hard as you can, and it's legit.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Like, this was not the time for subtlety.
Yeah, I'm just saying this is a case where I'm like, yeah, they're pushing it way too hard, but it works. So
I'm often suspicious of people who accuse something of being on the nose, because on the nose is where you're supposed to aim.
I often have the same problem and also feel like that.
I think when people criticize a message for being too on the nose, it's because they're the ones that this is a cautionary tale about. Like, they're feeling picked on.
It's sometimes just, even if something is on the nose, you don't want to be reminded a lot that it's on the nose. And there's a way to do it where you're not necessary. And I think even this doesn't necessarily make me think about if he was looking directly at the camera and said, "You audience viewing this film, The Great Dictator," you know, that would be bad.
I could have lived with that, to be honest.
did not do that. That's bad. We didn't get into the thing where Chaplin was actually born 4 days before Hitler. That's a weird, really weird coincidence.
Just like
there.
Paul McCartney and Brian Wilson.
They're
born 2 days apart.
Huh. But Hitler was born on 420, and that's where he got all of his power.
Ah, okay. Blazing.
Man. They must have had a smoking room at that hospital.
Yeah.
Well, I'll lay out the carpet for any final thoughts on The Great Dictator.
If you're listening to this and you haven't watched it because you weren't sure you're going to like it, give it a shot. It's funny.
If you're listening to this and you encounter a Nazi, punch him in the face. On the nose, in fact.
And that is also funny. And you know what else is funny? Is Kathy Griffin holding Donald Trump's severed head.
I mean, I'm willing to admit that she might not have been funny, but it's not because she was going after Trump. It's just because, you know, yeah. I don't find a lot of American comedians funny.
I don't think she's the funniest person, but I think... How would you guys feel about this movie if it was just Charlie Chaplin holding Hitler's head, bloody severed head at the end? Well, that'd be pretty
glorious
funny,
bastards,
right?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
I can't tell you if Kathy Griffin is funny. She goes into the box with Jimmy Fallon, of people that I met when I was doing the university union gig. So I took them to lunch or something, but I've actually never watched their comedy.
was she nice to you at least?
Yeah, she was cool. Yeah. Okay, I mean, good. I could tell. That's Bill Maher was not, by the way.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
and Greg Louganis. Greg Louganis.
Louganis.
He was on our wall of shame. We had a secret wall of shame in the back closet, and Bill Maher and Greg Louganis were on it for people that visited the university and sucked. And Modesky, Martin, and Woods managers. They sucked.
Huh.
Well, I'm going to stick up for Bill Maher real quick. I had about a 30-minute conversation with him one night. I thought he was excellent. Very, very friendly and approachable. Different night, different mood, different circumstances.
Being at a university, dumb kid circling you, change your thing a little bit, I guess. So
yeah.
Although he is pretty aggressive with people in Club Random sometimes, if you ever see that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if this movie was Kathy Griffin holding Bill Maher's severed head, I'd probably still laugh.
That would be surprising.
Or if it was Kathy Griffin and Inglourious Bastards, and somebody said, "You will be canceled for this," and she went, "Nah, probably just chewed out. I've been chewed out before."
I think that actually has cost her a lot of work. you know, I like loud women though, so good for her. I think she's at least pretty cool.
Lorraine Bracco and Medicine Man. Can you handle that much loud woman?
Haven't seen it. Is it on the list?
No.
Then I'll never watch it.
It's definitely on the good list, and it's not bad enough to be on the bad list. It's like a 5.0 easy. And I mean, 4.5. It's slightly worse than that.
Something about Lorraine Bracco says in my head that this is an attractive person. Oh yeah, she's pretty.
She's great in Goodfellas. Yeah. She's in she's in what's it called? The Sopranos. She's great in those. She's just terrible in Medicine Man.
There's like 8 different photos of her and Sean Connery looking like they're just about to start banging right away in the IMDb page.
The movie does not have that chemistry.
Oh, okay. Well, weird.
And both of them are miscast horribly in that movie.
There's a poster in some other language that says Mato Grosso. Ooh. I guess that's Italian. Mato, and it has the two of them standing next to each other looking like they're gonna have sex.
Anyway, Medicine Man, a movie I'm not recommending. Okay.
That's my birthday choice this year. Medicine. No, it's not.
Mike, if you got a final thought, you can throw that out, or I know you've got your Orville news coming up, so
yeah, just it kind of reminds me a little bit of why the Packlids made such a horrible villain in Lower Decks, you know, or such a formidable villain. You know, they're buffoons, but they're buffoons that are kind of all pointed in the right direction, and that makes them dangerous. And you know, this kind of cartoonish look at Nazism, dressed in, you know, kind of an incompetent casing that it was, is still dangerous and should not be taken lightly. So that's kind of where I land on it, why I think it's a good film. The Orville, our contact at the Orville asked us to leak that season 4 has been greenlit, as long as we didn't use their name. So we shared that on social media the other day. So it's I think it'll be, you know, just this was not part of the conversation. That conversation was just, yeah, go ahead. If you guys want to go ahead and announce that it's greenlit, just don't use my name. We felt confident that the source was high enough in the organization that we could do that. And then just talking to other people tangentially involved, they were like, it's probably still going to be the better part of a pretty good period of time before they're back in the studio. So just with the backlog of work after the strikes and things like that. But that's kind of where it stands right now. So Jessica and I are planning on cutting 8 supplemental episodes just called Talking Ted. And that's hopefully when people Google Ted Talks, they'll find us and click on it. And we'll dig into that series a little bit, because there's about 5 cast members or so, 5 regular cast members. I'd say 4 regular cast members from the Orville, 1 recurring guest, 1 one-time guest. And then also the great Tim Russ appears on both the Orville and Ted. So, and I think he's probably just cool. So we got him on the list of people we want to talk to, have a designer cocktail and chat about the show. That's probably all I can say for now, but more on that, when and if we do actually end up cutting those and releasing them, which hopefully will be about the time this gets released.
Awesome. Well, I don't know. Can I say congratulations to you for the Orville being renewed?
It was probably not. I was flattered that, you know, we were the ones that were asked to leak it. So I think, nice. You know, I'll take congratulations for that. And
that's cool. And, you get to be spies, sort of.
Yeah. And only that. But you can, you know, find our, you know, patreon.com/missionlog is where you can find us, or missionlogtheorville, ML_theorville. It's pretty much on all our handles, and you can catch us on any of the podcatchers. And if they're when season 4 does drop, you can always go back and listen to the older episodes of Mission Log the Orville on the Roddenberry Podcast Network.
Nice.
As for us, for Films and Filth, if you want to support us on Patreon or at Podcastio Podcastius, talk about the Twilight Zone at Time Enough Podcast. Everyone in this Zoom call has done that. Podcast 1999, where Mark and I talk about Space 1999, and Mike's been around for a couple of those. And meanwhile, Luke loves Pokemon. We brought that up earlier. Hyrule Field Report and the game show also mentioned in this podcast. It's a weird rotating crystal of intersecting podcasts sometimes, I guess.
It's called a network.
It's called a network. It's a network.
Podcastius network, baby.
It's a network.
Yeah. Podcastio Podcastius. Just loop that every time.
Okay, Luke, I think you got a speech for us.
Good morning. A few hours from now, aircraft from here will join those from around the world, take part in the greatest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind. That word should have new meaning for all of us. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and this day will no longer be an American holiday, but the day that the whole world said in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not surrender without a fight. We're going to live on. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day. I think I cut a little bit there, but it's fine.
Hail Hinkle.